The Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review, brought to you by Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations in Daphne and in Malbus with a state-of-the-art car wash. Dr. Lou is our host as usual, the president of the Common Sense Campaign and adjunct professor of political science at Spring Hill College. And good morning, Dr. Lou.
Well, good morning, and it is a nice morning.
He tells me 15 minutes before the show starts that he wants to play an audio bite. So I'm going to try to find it.
It
for
was
you.
Not 15 minutes. It was 15 seconds.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and I'm at fault here. I get that.
That's okay.
All right. See, this is what happens when people like me are thrown behind the mic. We just don't think about things like that.
It's
just
right.
Like, sure. Let's just play it. And I told Lori, I said, I want to do this like I did when we were talking about AI, and I played my HAL. You know, the segment of how the computer who was taken over 2001.
You played it from your cell phone, and we couldn't hear it. So we're going to try to pull up what you
want
to play.
We're going to try to do something different. I want to bring Ronald Reagan in for a Memorial Day message. And I know that Memorial Day is coming up. But at any rate. All right, so what are we going to do today? I certainly want to talk about the debt business. I mean, the debt ceiling issue is still out there, and they're back and forth on all of that. I want to mention something that happened with the Supreme Court concerning another defeat for the environmental wackos in Biden's administration, and I'll cover that one. I want to really follow up on the Durham report and the degree to which the deep state was just identified. And yet, where are the prosecutions, okay? We need to talk a little bit about that. Then I want to get into some state issues. The session has not quite wound up, but it basically is. There are 2 days left, and that's going to be for reconciling whatever happens. The governor may decide to send something back, and if she does, then it'll be one of these things where it just, something will happen. So we'll see where that goes. I also want to talk about some of our bills and where they went and what happened. I'll give you a little bit of an update on that. And then I've asked Stephanie Dernan to come in and talk about the health freedom bills that what happened with some of those. Okay, so once we finish with that, if there's time, I want to talk a little bit about Monday night's city council meeting that several of us went to and really kind of raised the objections about this gay pride festival that's coming up on Friday. Next Friday, the 2nd of June. There are some real questions going on, and the points that I tried to raise is that community standards here and in Alabama in general do not necessarily favor what is going on with all this. And so, you know, as I pointed out, the governor just fired the director of the pre-K program for having using woke materials in the program. We've had bills passed that restrict using drugs to go through this trans process. So it seems to me that Alabama as a state has, and Fairhope, part of that, is much more aligned along the lines of traditional values, customs, and all like that. And so why are we sponsoring a gay pride festival? You know? Now, if they wanted to do it somewhere else in a private setting, which is actually going to happen, there's going to be a drag show in one of the local businesses. But even they went from making it open to anyone to you have to be 18 and over to get in it.
To purchase a ticket.
Right. Okay.
So you have to be 18 or older.
Right. So
not 18 or older to attend. It has been clarified.
Okay. Isn't that what I just said? That you had to be 18 or over to get in?
then I've discovered it's 18 or older to purchase a ticket. So that leads, that does that mean someone could bring an underage or not? We don't know.
Well, the way I interpreted it was, is it looks like that they have tamped down the issue of age. But be that as it may, we'll see how it works out. Anyway, I didn't want to jump into this, but since I'm into it, you know, there we are.
And if yes. I may clarify, the city of Fairhope is not sponsoring this event. The city simply allowed them to rent the facility.
Yeah,
well, as to not discriminate.
Yeah.
And when I interviewed Fairhope City Council President Jay Robinson about this,
mm-hmm.
and from his viewpoint as a lawyer,
right.
and as the council president, they cannot refuse the rental.
Yeah. We think that there's a different approach to take to that.
I understand.
So, you
mm-hmm.
know.
One of them was brought up to create an ordinance that would prevent such
right.
a thing.
I mean, it just, you know, and here again, we it's sort of one of these things where, on the one hand, we're saying all of these things about not doing woke and, you know, blah, 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 and then we're just exposing kids to all sorts of problems with, and again, we had folks who were there at the last year's festival, and they went down the road of pretty much telling you that there were things that were being shown to kids that year, last year, that really were just, you know, not correct. Now you say, okay, well, that's everybody's interpretation of that. But if it's crossing the boundary of obscenity laws, then what are we saying? It's okay to do all that just because it's Gay Pride Week? I don't think that that's the way to go with this. But be that as it may, I will further develop this if we have time, since I've gotten down a rabbit hole already on on an issue. All right. Let's talk about the debt ceiling business. And here again, I recognize that, you know, this is highly political, okay? So, and we're conservative, and so we have a tendency to look at this through a conservative prism. I get that. But I don't quite understand how it's so difficult for the radical left libs, who seem to be fixated on just spending and spending and spending. And listen, for those of you who are over, you know, 50, there's nothing new about this whole question of spending. We have had these issues forever, okay? I mean, Eisenhower was all about having a balanced budget. And it was difficult for him to even do that. So, having said all of that, one can argue that this is just another example of how, you know, politics just distorts all reason, blah, blah, blah. Unfortunately, for this particular discussion, we now are at $31.7 trillion, and it's costing us over $500 billion. Thank you, Lori, for the water. $500 billion in the interest payments. Now, I don't know about you, but, you know, when I look at interest payments on our, you know, MasterCard or whatever, I say, oh, my God, you know, what a waste of money. And it is, okay? But the fact of the matter is, it's a credit card, so you're going to have to pay some interest on it. Well, the interest on this debt that we have is getting to the point where it's eating up a quarter of the budget. And it's only going to get worse the more we pile it on. So the real question is, at what point does the whole damn thing collapse? And I think that that's where we are at this point. And maybe some people are waking up to the fact that this is, quote, unsustainable. I mean, the left keeps talking about sustainability for everything. Well, but if your economy is not sustainable, and here again, we get back to one of those little sideshows here. The left doesn't want the economy to be stable and sustainable. They want the chaos. They want to bring the kind of chaos that Cloward and Piven, I talked about that last week. They want this. The border is the classic example. Overwhelming all the border states. What's going to happen? Big government's got to come in, fix it. Look at New York's Governor Adams. He's crying every day about, oh, the federal government won't help us. I mean, he's a damn sanctuary city. So why should we be, you know, concerned about it? They wanted this. They got it too bad. Yes, Laurie is getting quite concerned. I was ranting too far afield here.
I appreciate your editing of yourself.
Right, I'm trying. It's hard, though. Okay, so at any rate, here you have this kind of stuff going on with, and where we are with it, and I think Kevin McCarthy is absolutely right. And to tell you the truth, those of us who are on the conservative right really think that just going back to the spending levels of fiscal year 22 is not sufficient. And that's what the Freedom Caucus is going to be arguing. So the real question is that if McCarthy is only going to cut it on the margins and accept a 1% growth, I mean, that's better than nothing. But the reality is that, you know, we're not really doing that much, okay? But yet, look at AOC and Cori Bush. I mean, they're going nuts about this. You know, they're talking about street riots. You know, the street won't accept this. Well, Antifa and BLM, I'm sure they'll be out there burning and looting and doing all the stuff that they always do, and they'll go unchallenged. You know? I mean, that's going to happen. So, when it does happen, maybe it'll happen in the wrong place, and somebody will actually stop them, arrest them, put them in jail and charge them, you know, for the kind of conduct that they should have been charged with in the 2020 summer riots. But that's a hope, and it's not necessarily going to happen. I get that, but I can still talk about it and hope that it does happen. All right, so the debt stealing business hinges on a couple of things here, okay? Will Biden accept, you know, work requirements associated with getting, you know, food stamps and all like that? Well, I mean, he said yes to it when he was a senator, but now, oh my God, AOC and the squad are going crazy over work requirements. Absolutely not. I mean, even Clinton and Gingrich were able to get work requirements for welfare, but not anymore. WORK is the new, you know, bad word, four-letter word. Can't use it, can't say it. Sure, they don't want to do it. Oh, working? Oh, forget that. You know, and here it goes right back to our education system. What are they teaching the kids in school? You know, DEI, this whole question of equity. Everybody gets the same. Well, I mean, does that carry over when you're an adult? You know, everybody gets the same. All right, so we get a doled out, you know, dollar from the government so that everybody is the same. Is that what this country was built on? I don't think so. It's crap, okay? But nevertheless, that crap seems to sell, and it sure has gone a long way for the Democrats to gain power and keep power. Just go ballot harvesting and get all those ballots for those folks who are on the dole. And guess what? It just keeps coming and coming. And it ain't going to stop. So here we are. So we're going to see where this goes. Now, it's interesting. It's Memorial Day weekend, so they're in the middle of a debt crisis, but everybody's coming home for Memorial Day. Except McCarthy did keep his negotiating team on standby in D.C., so they're actually working. Let's hope that they work to solve this thing. But, you know, it's really interesting. You know, some of the more conservative economists like Steve Moore, I heard him talking the other day. He said, well, look, even if you get to the debt ceiling at you know, June 1st, that's the magic date, the country is still bringing in money. Debts can be paid. And, you know, so to a certain degree, this is an artificial, you know, argument here in terms of what the real debt ceiling crisis would look like. But in the end, I don't think any of us want to test that proposition and see how bad it really does get simply to prove the theory one way or the other. I think it's much better if McCarthy and Biden can come to an agreement and get this sorted out, okay? So we'll leave it at that. By this time, next week, June 2nd, we will know what be's happening, because June 1st is Thursday, and they better have their act together. And here's a problem. I mean, like I said, it's Memorial Day weekend. They're all going off to do all of that Memorial Day stuff, which is fine. They come back on Tuesday. According to the McCarthy rules, bills have to have 72 hours to be reviewed. That brings you to Thursday. And I would argue that, you know, if this is going to be, you know, done in time for Thursday at midnight, they better have it all together and have it locked on with those people who are going to vote for it and make it happen. So we shall see. Okay, stand by. Don't go anywhere. I'll be back next Friday to give you the bad news or the good news. Hey, I mean, this is nuts. It really is. But be that as it may. All right, let's talk about the Supreme Court of the United States. Okay, they had a case come up where these homeowners wanted to build a house. Now, this is 10 years that this couple has been trying to build a house. I think it's in Texas, all right? But because there was water on the property, the EPA and the Corps of Engineers got involved with this and said, well, wait a minute, this is part of the Clean Water Act, and it's contingent on other waters, therefore you can't build on your property. In a 5-4 decision, the Supreme Court said, no, the water is not contingent, it's land, the water that's there is not part of an ocean, a river, a stream, or a lake. So they shot it down. Now, this is the second year in a row that the Supreme Court has shot down something that the Biden environmentalists have tried to impose. Last year it had to do with extremely harsh rules to try to eliminate greenhouse gases coming from various industries. And the court said it was too onerous. And you know, the interesting thing about this is that over time we have really cut down on all of those things through technological, you know, innovation and researching linked to actual funding. And it's just amazing how good things can be if we just work together to make some of this stuff happen, instead of trying to superimpose the absolute insanity of climate change, religion, on everything that goes on. But that's what's coming down the pike with all of this, and you know, the degree to which all of this is going to happen, regardless of what you and I want, is pretty much assured. I mean, if remember we had this conversation with Kevin Spriggs and Deke Cox just a couple of weeks ago about the electrification of the cars and all like that. I mean, this is moving along a whole lot faster than what you think. And the argument basically is that whether you want to buy a gas car or not, hey, too bad, because places like California are already mandating no gas cars in California. So, I mean, we'll see how all of this goes, but the reality is that we're in for a whole lot of change that may not be good, and it's all driven by the Great Reset and the whole attempt to try to control everything under one umbrella. And that umbrella is not going to be friendly to a capitalist, freedom-loving country like the United States. And the latest example of this is this whole question about the World Health Organization being given the ability to control any kind of pandemic regulations, any kind of future pandemic regulations. And Biden and them are not resisting this. If you remember, Trump took us out of WHO because the WHO is controlled, the WHO director is bought and paid for by the Communist Chinese. And I think that You know, at this particular juncture, I think I mentioned this last week, if Biden just tries to adopt this measure without sending it as a treaty like Obama did, you know, bypassing the Senate for the Iran nuclear deal, you remember how that worked out for them. Let's hope that our people in the GOP House use everything, every means they have to stop something like this, knowing, yes, that, you know, the Senate does treaties, not the House, I get that. But somewhere along the line, people have got to stand up and start saying, whoa, we're not going down this road, okay? So we shall see how that one works out, okay? I want to just go back to the Durham report before Stephanie comes on. She should be on at about 10:35. So, you know, last week we talked about the whistleblowers. We talked about the deep state, the Durham report. And, I mean, it really is, in retrospect, incredible what the FBI did. And you say, okay, well, you're a broken record here. You're damn right I'm a broken record. Look what they did. I mean, are Peter Strzok and McCabe and Comey just going to walk away from the fact that they broke the law and did what they did? I mean, it's pretty clear that they did break the law, okay? And I'm not going to, you know, go back over all elements of the Durham report. But here's the element of the report that I don't get. Why did he not prosecute? He had prosecutorial abilities. And so, you know, Jim Jordan was asked this on one of the talk shows last Sunday. And he basically said, look, we're accountable. The FBI and others are accountable to us. And we're going to get to the bottom of this. And we are going to do whatever we have to do that's in our jurisdiction and our authority to do it. Part of that means cutting funds off of these people, okay? Well, we'll see how that goes. But while we're cutting funds, you know what, in terms of the budget? Sure, why not cut things like the Department of Education? I mean, what the hell have they done for education? Absolutely nothing. Scores are down, you know. Prices have gone up for college and all the rest of it. So, but my point here is that, yes, the House has the capability to use the appropriations, you know, that's part of the House mandate. And they should do it with the FBI, you know. I mean, they can line item out certain aspects of what the FBI is asking for money. You know, I mean, let's just start doing this. Well, here's one that Jordan did mention. They want a new building. I think I mentioned this last week. $500 or $600 million. Forget it. You're not going to get it. The first thing they should do is build something, you know, less extreme in cost, and take it out of D.C. Get it out of the swamp. But, you know, whatever reforms come out of the Durham report, one can hope that moving along the lines of taking what was the premier worldwide investigatory, you know, organization and getting it fixed. How that happens remains to be seen, you know, but it needs to be done. We can't have the Strzoks, the McCabes, and people like Comey doing what they did. I mean, and the fact that they have weaponized all of this against Americans who are protesting at school boards, I mean, that's outrageous. And it seems to me it's just as outrageous to be going after people who are, you know, having protests at Planned Parenthood. And I mean, maybe in the scale of what's outrageous to you and maybe to me may be different, but let me throw this out. The whole memo about the Catholic Church that started in Richmond, where they were going to have infiltrators into the Catholic Church to see what's really going on among the hate mongers in there. You've got to be kidding me. I mean, the broad picture here is this is an attack on not only our fundamental, foundational, you know, things like the Constitution, okay? It's an attack on the Christian conservative approach to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And that's what's happening here. And our problem here in Alabama is that it's a red state, so we feel secure about all this. You know, we're not living in California. We're not living in Michigan. We're not living in New York. Thank God. But the fact is that because we're not seeing firsthand all of these problems, it gives us a sense of it ain't real. But it is real. It's quite real. And guess what? These people who want to do these destructive things are in charge. So we better keep our powder dry, obviously, but we need to do more than that. We've got to continue to push forward the freedom agenda and push our officials like Jerry Carl and those of our officials who are down here, you know, in our state government and in our local government. That's why this whole Pride Festival is so troubling. I mean, why are we shooting ourselves in the foot over something like this? And, you know, the argument has been that, well, you know, they're free to march and do all like that. That's not the issue. The issue is why in the world are we moving in a direction that makes it possible for them to do this without saying, providing some alternatives that limit how this is happening. But
are you saying, for instance, if it were inside a building such as the Civic Center, as yeah. opposed to being on a public beach where children will be playing?
Yes, that's one solution. See, Laurie and I can talk about these things, you know. So, so yes, Laurie, I think that would be a solution.
Okay.
It is now 10:34. And Stephanie Dernan has just called in. Good morning, Stephanie.
Hey, good morning, Dr. Lou.
Well, how are you doing?
You know, it was a long night last night. Those legislators were in session till after midnight, and so it takes a lot of effort and energy to watch those people.
Yes, I hear you.
Do the things that they do.
Well, listen, I appreciate you getting up and talking, getting on the phone with us. And just to you know, reintroduce Stephanie, she's the co-director of Health Freedom Alabama, which has been so instrumental in bringing health freedom issues to the public, you know, public's attention, and the degree to which, you know, there seems to be a real denial of health freedom in so many, many areas in this state. So I really welcome you, Stephanie. I appreciate what you've done over the last few years and taking the time for coming in, especially if you've been up till midnight with all of your children that you have to take care of, too. So
you definitely get a gold star. It's such a pleasure to be here, and thanks for having me.
Okay. All right. So let's get down to brass tacks here, okay? Let's talk about some of the health issues that you had and the bills that you sponsored, and let us know the status of those. I know that you had some success with the you tell me what was successful and then what's left on the table and what we need to fight for, okay?
Oh, my goodness. There are no shortage of battles in this state. You know, you would think with us living in a trifecta red state that we would not have such a problem passing good, solid legislation that protects our individual rights and liberties to be free from medical procedures or forced vaccination. But quite frankly, we live in a very blue state. We have legislators, including our House Speaker, who ran as a Democrat up until just a few years ago.
Right.
And it's such a problem because we have a situation where our legislators are not interested in protecting individual rights and liberties. They are more focused on protecting the rights of businesses to lord over their employees' bodies. And that's such a problem because foundationally, if you protect the rights and liberties of individuals first, that in turn then protects the rights of businesses after the fact. So
can I ask you
that's
something?
Kind of where we are.
Let me ask you this question, okay? And I mean, I hear, and I don't disagree that Ledbetter's a former Democrat. I get that, okay? So this philosophical side of it, he's not inclined. But I think that there's a very real practical side of this. And we saw this, excuse me, with Common Core. The Business Council of Alabama has just been paying all of these people to keep Common Core, regardless of the fact that it was never piloted, it's been a disaster, blah, blah, blah. So do you not think that's a calculation in their minds? I mean, we heard that the business community was going crazy all over any of these things, whether it was ESG, whether it was, you know, your health freedom bill. I mean, how do you factor that into how you move forward if they're just buying these votes no matter what?
You know, the Business Council of Alabama is one of the biggest reasons we do not have more individual freedom in this state, and the reason why the interest of businesses is taken over the interest of individual liberties.
Yeah.
And the amount of power and sway that they have over our government is absolutely obscene. To the fact that the head of the BCA enjoys regular meetings and contact with our governor and with our legislators and with our leaders in the state.
I mean, that's outrageous.
And they promote massive amounts of legislation. Not only that, but they donate millions of dollars combined to the campaign funds of not only Republican legislators, but also Democrat legislators.
Right. Well, I mean, you see, I mean, that's a nexus that you know, we can talk about it a different time, okay? But I do think that you're fighting the good fight. There's no question about that. But, you know, we're knocking our heads against the wall. I know that that's the case with Common Core. Now, we haven't given up on it, and we continue to believe that if we had the right governor, we might actually make progress with some of these issues. So, but, okay, so let's, philosophically, I think we're on the same page with that. There's no question about that. So let's just talk about some of the bills that you brought up and what happened to them.
Well, our flagship bill, Dr. Liu, is HB 324. It's called the Alabama Health Freedom Act. Most people will know this bill as HB 31 from last year, and what it does is it stops discrimination based upon your vaccination status. It also allows the state to embark upon a policy that allows them to refuse any future federal mandates on a state level and gets our state attorney general involved as well in protecting those individual liberties, but also protecting businesses from federal government overreach as well.
Right.
So it's really a bill that not only protects the individual, but then also protects the business from federal intrusion into the way they run things via those mandates that we saw. Unfortunately, the bill has been blocked in the Health Committee by Representative Paul Lee, who is the chairman. And, you know, that's one of the reasons that we say it's so important not only for you to know who your legislators are, your House rep and your senator is, but this highlights the fact that there are other people in the legislature who can impact the way your life unfolds.
Yeah.
Through legislative acts throughout the course of, you know, your day-to-day life. And the decisions that Chairman Paul Lee has made is really a prime example of that. It's disturbing that our state health committee is essentially a captured board. Two examples of that are one legislator on the state health committee in the House is named Representative Rhett Marquez, who consistently says that he believes an employer should be able to do whatever they want to with their employee, including vaccination, right, and forced vaccination at that. And if you look at their campaign contributions, Representative Marquez was given over $20,000 by out-of-state pharmaceutical companies, in-state medical PACs, to his campaign fund. Right. And it's disturbing how much money they receive from out-of-state people who are influencing their decisions,
right,
to go against the basic fundamental liberties of Alabama citizens. So I think most Alabama people would be surprised at how much out-of-state influence these PACs and these medical associations and these pharmaceutical companies have over their Alabama legislators. Another example of that is Chairman Paul Lee has received almost $60,000 in a short span of only 14 months during the pandemic. While we are fighting against mandates, we're fighting to protect our jobs, people are being forced to get a COVID vaccination against their will, left and right, just to be able to provide for their family. And while that's going on, his company that he owns is receiving federal money and federal grants for PPI manufacturing, and he's getting money from places like Pfizer and out-of-state pharmaceutical companies and PACs and medical associations out of Washington, D.C. We had a captured medical or state health committee on the House side for sure, and it's such a problem, and people really need to stand up and get angry about that, because you can contact your representative all you want, but when we have situations like where Chairman Paul Lee is blocking very important legislation because he's getting money funneled into his pocket from out-of-state pharmaceutical companies, it's obscene. It is absolutely obscene how this is going on.
Well, you're exactly right about that, and I think that this is something that somewhere along the line, you know, we keep talking about, you know, reforming, you know, the whole, you know, process of, you know, contributions. And here again, we get back to a First Amendment right. Money is part of that. I get that. But clearly, the impact of the money is, it the proof of the pudding is right what you just said. You know, he's sitting on this bill, going nowhere, and that's the end of the story. And unfortunately for us, you know, how we deal with this and move to try to rectify this is not going to be easy, especially since it's not in the interest of these, you know, legislators to mandate any kind of, you know, contributory reform that would, you know, say, you know, say something along the lines of trying to limit outside influence, something along those lines. I mean, you know, who would you get to vote for that? But I do think that that's a conversation we all need to have in terms of the Alabama Conservative Coalition, and start looking into how we can try to, you know, take care of this. I don't know. Okay, so please tell us about some of the other bills.
Well, we were surprised to have a bill on the agenda called HB 4, and that was actually sponsored by a Democrat named Prince Chestnut. That bill would stop forced microchipping of employees against their conscience.
Right.
And that passed unanimously out of the House, which stunned me, because it's the same thing. If you can vote for this bill, then why won't, and Paul Lee voted for it as well, in favor of it, so then why won't Paul Lee vote for this bill that says you cannot force vaccinate your employees? And fundamentally, it all boils down to money. He has received so much money to stand against that bill and not allow it through, And there aren't any microchipping companies out there funneling money into his campaign saying, no, no, don't vote for that. So we're just waiting for HB 4 to be signed by the governor at this point. So we're very pleased that that has gone through. There are several companies in other states that are already offering that particular quote-unquote service to their employees. And there are so many issues that comes from a situation where you are requiring microchips into the hands or bodies of employees. And I think 3 years ago, we would have scoffed at this type of legislation. I think many people, maybe not necessarily Health Freedom, because we've been keeping an eye on that for quite some time, but it was pretty apparent during the debating process that 3 years ago, many people would have said, we don't need that type of legislation. And here we are now, post-COVID.
Right.
And we can all see where that type of legislation could be needed down the road.
Okay. What else do you have to report?
Well, HB 186 and 187, sponsored by Representative Chip Brown over in Mobile, has been blocked in the Rules Committee. And those two bills, one protects the parents' rights to decide to mask their child or not if there are any future pandemic type of situations where the school board is trying to force mask your child. School would give the parent the right to say no and opt out. And the other one was a bill that would require parent signature for vaccinations at the doctor's office.
Right.
So those bills are both stalled in the Rules Committee. Representative Lovern is the Rules Committee chairman, and that those two bills have been very, very quiet, even though our members have been especially interested in that parents' rights bill.
Okay, so let me ask you this. The one bill that I think you and I had a conversation on then that you couldn't support was SB 171, the public health bill. So just give me a quick sense of what we can do to make that bill more more acceptable to health freedom. I think because we're all interested in making that change.
Right. It's, for your listeners, SB 171 would have changed the way that the state health officer is chosen. So currently, our state health officer is Dr. Scott Harris, who quite frankly just needs to go on and leave and be fired by the state, in my opinion, in the way that he handled things and restricted the liberties of people in this state. But our state health officer is chosen by a private medical board, and it's the only state in the country that chooses our state health officer this way.
Right.
SB 171 would have done a couple of things, and although it started off okay, there have been several amendments added to that bill that has really made it a dangerous bill. It would have still allowed our private medical board to choose a list of state health officer options to give to the governor to pick from. It's such a problem. The bill is such a problem because what's going to happen is if it passes, they're going to throw their hands up and say, oh, we addressed this problem, we fixed the problem, and really, it's really, with the amendments and everything, has turned into a bad bill. What would make it better is if you remove the state health officer component completely from the decisions or the
medical board?
Right, the medical board there, and being able to be picked by the private medical board. Thank you, Dr. Lewis.
That's okay.
And left it up completely to the governor, but also add a recall factor by the Senate into this bill so that, we have a state health officer who's answerable to an elected official like the governor and is serving at the pleasure of the governor as a cabinet-level position. But if we have a governor who's going sideways, just like Governor Ivey did, who rubber stamped everything Scott Harris wanted anyway, it gives the Senate an option to look at the totality of circumstances and start the recall petition to remove him.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's certainly one of the you know, another key aspect of it is the recall. But you know what you end up getting here, though, is that because timing is always the issue, if the Senate is not in session, then nothing is going to happen. So that pushes it back to another bill that we were supporting, which was to have, you know, the state legislature being able to call itself back into session. I mean, in a classic example of like this is if they wanted to impeach Bentley, they couldn't do it until they came back into session 6 months later. So, you know, if there are these issues, then, you know, being able to recall is contingent upon being in session. So, you know, it just seems like there's so many layers to this that I don't know if it'll ever get done, but it seems like conceptually Harris has just kind of shot himself in the foot over not only his handling of the pandemic, but this whole question of recently over you know, squawking about the fact that the legislature passed bills that wouldn't allow kids to take drugs to trans and do all like that. I mean, he's speaking publicly at some convention, if I'm not mistaken, and that just kind of got everybody's attention and said, well, wow, this isn't good. And of course it's not good, but the issue now becomes, you know, how do you carve out, you know, or cut out the medical board from the selection process? I mean, I can see that that's going to be a major issue, and while I don't disagree that they need to be contained in terms of how much influence they have, getting to that point seems to me that they should have a say, but how we want to, you know, categorize that say other than as an advisory opinion or something like that. I mean, what do you think about that? I mean, we're just kind of talking about this right now, but it seems to me that if we don't talk about it, it's just not going to get fixed.
Well, you know, I've spoken to many older doctors, doctors who have been part of the Concerned Doctors of Alabama, which was part of the Frontline Critical Care Alliance during COVID debacle. And they are stunned, honestly. It kind of boils down to the medical institutions that our doctors are going through as far as for their education. The course that the medical schools have taken in the spectrum of thinking has gone from an unbiased situation to where they are now injecting their own bias and politics into the medical care that they give.
Right.
And they are also another institution that's captured by the pharmaceutical companies. You know, they are now taught just how to dispense drugs, not how to treat disease and treat the person as a whole. And so that kind of boils down to the problem from the doctors from the bottom up. But when you have a state health officer in a red state who is openly objecting to the legislation that has been passed by our Republican conservative lawmakers, especially when it comes down to something as detrimental and
It's a fundamental issue.
Mutilating as the transgender medical policies that some of these medical institutions have, it's stunning, and he should be
held
able
accountable.
To be removed. But we're stuck with him making $300,000 a year at least.
Laurie wants to say something.
Yeah, what about the legislation that Chris Elliott wanted to or did propose after the pandemic that would have removed the authority the health officer has to shut things down? The governor had to agree with him. He had the power to shut the beaches and shut the businesses. And there was going to be legislation to remove that power. Have you heard anything about that?
Well, that went nowhere last year.
Yeah, none of that went anywhere, unfortunately.
Okay.
The pandemic was over, and they kind of
legislates more from the executive branch than anybody would think. And the legislators, quite frankly, are afraid to go against what she wants. And they'll say that many times. while they're debating, oh, this is what the governor wants, or, oh, this bill came straight from the governor's desk. And legally, that's a problem. You know, we have three branches of government for a reason, and she needs to stick to her own lane.
Yeah, well, it's amazing. She's dead on arrival when it comes to trying to fix education. But boy, she's just hot to trot for getting roads to go nowhere, that sort of thing. But all right, well, Stephanie, I have to say, I've got a couple of minutes left, and I want to try to do something for Memorial Day. But I really appreciate you coming on and giving us an update, excuse me, on what Health Freedom, you know, is doing and the good work that you're accomplishing. And even though some of these things didn't get there, we're supporting everything you do. So thanks again, and I'll be talking to you soon.
Well, thank you, Dr. Liu. Okay. Yeah, we've been able to defeat a couple of bills, too. We'll have more to talk about that some other time. But
okay.
Y'all keep an eye on those legislators. They're reconvening Wednesday afternoon. They will not be there Tuesday.
Okay.
Thank you
Wednesday
so much.
Afternoon. So we suspect that next week will probably be their last week in Montgomery.
Okay. Thanks, Steph.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Okay. I found the soundbite that you wanted, the exact soundbite.
So, I mean, this is from Hillsdale College, and it's a Memorial Day tribute given to us by Ronald Reagan. So please take a listen to this.
We are a nation under God, and I believe God intended for us to be free. We must realize that no arsenal or no weapon in the arsenals of the world is so formidable as the will and moral courage of free men and women. The price for this freedom at times has been high, but we have never been unwilling to pay that price. Those who say that we're in a time when there are no heroes, they just don't know where to look. The sloping hills of Arlington National Cemetery, with its row upon row of simple white markers bearing crosses or stars of David. Their lives ended in places called Bellow Wood, the Argonne, Omaha Beach, Salerno, and halfway around the world on Guadalcanal, Tarawa, Porkchop Hill, the Chosin Reservoir, and in 100 rice paddies and jungles of a place called Vietnam. They add up to only a tiny fraction of the price that has been paid for our freedom.
Well, you know, when you hear Reagan and you listen to this, and I would urge you to go to Hillsdale College, find it online, Google it, and listen to their tribute. I know that Common Sense Campaign will be sending out a Memorial Day tribute too, but the reality is that we're here because of the willingness of so many people to do what was necessary to preserve our freedom. And the sad thing is that we're seeing that freedom being whittled away, not slowly, but quickly, because of the politics of the left and these Marxists. And all I can say is that these folks who died for us deserve better, and people like Common Sense Campaign, the Alabama Conservative Coalition, other liberty-loving groups throughout the country are not going to just let this go by the by. We are going to fight these people, and we are going to win. So have a wonderful weekend. Think about the seriousness of the Memorial Day weekend. It's not about barbecues. It's about those who served and died so you could have your barbecue. Okay? Think about it. Y'all take care. Have a good weekend. Bye.
Thank you, Dr. Liu. You've been listening to the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review, brought to you by Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations in Daphne and in Malbus with the state-of-the-art car wash, and by an anonymous sponsor. If you missed this program, you can listen to it later at WABF1480.com. Now resuming regular programming.